Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill speaks with Dre Graham, Florida's 2020 Teacher of the Year. Dre's last year touring the state has led him into his new role as the Executive Director of the Department of Education's Office of Independent Education and Parental Choice. It may seem like a strange career choice for the music teacher from King High, a Title I school in Tampa. How does he plan to tackle his new role? Through a devout commitment to delivering access and equity, and with a focus on bringing people together, ending traditionally perceived divides between education choice and traditional schooling. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So today we're with Dr. Dre Graham, who is the new director of the Office of School Choice in Florida Department of Education. Dre, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Excited to have you on the podcast. I want to start with a little bit of background on you, because I know you're somewhat famous in Florida, being the national or state teacher of the year, but not everybody in Florida knows you. And of course, this goes around the country, and Ed Choice movement around the country will be interested in knowing about you. So give us a little bit of background on Dre Graham.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first off.
Sure.
But I guess a little bit about me. I was raised in Tampa Bay area. I literally probably been around the majority of that district, being the seventh largest district in the nation, but started on one side with my family. We moved to the opposite side of the county, and so the number of schools I've been to is extensive. But then decided, you know, when I got to high school, that I wanted to have something with a little bit more consistency, so I joined the IB program at King High School, my alma mater. Once I graduated from King with the IB diploma, went on to the University of Florida, go Gators. I got my bachelor's in music education, went immediately into my master's, and then had a chance to take over for my high school band director.
Wow.
I got to replace her at my alma mater.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's where I've been for the last 10 years. So teaching those students who literally are in the same seats that I had a chance to be in. And then, as you mentioned, last year got to serve as the 2020 Florida Teacher of the Year before getting an opportunity to move on to the work with the department as the executive director for the Office of Independent Education and Parental Choice.
So I think a lot of our listeners may not know this, but if you're the Florida State Teacher of the Year, you are invited to spend a year at the state with DOE. Talk real quickly about that experience.
Yeah, so as the teacher of the year, they give you a sabbatical, and you're also known as what's called the Krista McAuliffe Ambassador for Education. And so when I found out about that piece of it all, I was like, you know, well, if I'm going to be the ambassador for education, like, that's a heavy title,
right?
But I really should get to know what's going on in Florida. So my personal goal was to get to all 74 districts. And so a lot of people are like, well, wait, there's 67 counties. Correct. There are 67 counties, but then there are seven at-large, quote-unquote, districts. Four of our universities have laboratory schools, so UF, FSU, FAMU, and FAU all have lab schools. There's also the School for the Deaf and Blind is considered its own district, and then you have the Department of Corrections and Florida Virtual.
Right.
So each of those has a representative in amongst the 74. And so my personal goal was to get around to those districts, to get an opportunity to meet with them, and to learn just about what's happening in different places. And if anybody knows anything about Florida, we have an incredibly diverse state. I'm sure many people have heard the adage, the further south you go, really is the further north you go in Florida. And so just getting a chance to see how everything is so different. And fortunately, before all the COVID-19 things happened, I was able to finish and visit all 74.
Wow.
Four districts. So yeah, it was a task. But you also get opportunities to go around and provide professional development. I get to do speaking engagements and different things. And so I really found that most of my time was getting the opportunity to interact and create connections and learn more about people through providing different speaking engagements or participating in different speaking engagements and things like that. So it was absolutely incredible opportunity. Very sad that like it kind of was cut short, because we had some like really big events that I was going to get to participate in here at the end of the school year. But prayerfully, we'll have that opportunity again next year, as we, a lot of them were just postponed, and it's just this particular year they obviously weren't able to have the face-to-face connections, but we'll move forward, and whenever they have the annual event next year, still hopefully be able to be invited back.
So let's talk about your new gig, running running the Office of School Choice. I prefer Education Choice because, as you know, choice now is beyond just schools. Talk about what that office does and your vision for how you'd like to see that office function. And I'm going to get a little bit, too, about, you know, your vision about where we're going into the future with public education in general. Obviously, we're going through this major disruption. It's a tragedy that, you know, all the things are going on, but also there are opportunities embedded in the crisis that we can use this opportunity to make some things better. So first of all, let's talk about the department, what your plans are for your area, and then we'll talk a little bit about where you see things going.
Well, I really like that you use the word opportunity, because that's one that I use a lot. My biggest concern is an equitable educational experience. And in everything that I do, whenever it involves education, which is pretty much everything, it always goes back to the students. How is this impacting the students, and how is this being equitable for all students? I look back to my time in the classroom, and I feel like that's my biggest learning tool and the biggest advantage I have to coming into this position is being a teacher and seeing firsthand, working in a Title I area, which, I mean, I can't imagine working anywhere else. I mean, those students are some of the best students. They come with so much, but then they also come with so much. So you really have to learn. You have to have a heart for those students. But in terms of our office, the whole purpose is to continue to promote equity. And there, a lot of people don't understand the difference between equality and equity, but I think it's really important to understand that it's not about every student succeeding, although obviously that's the plan. The desire is that every single student succeeds. In reality, that's not going to happen, but what our job is as the adults who have the opportunities to influence those elements is to make sure that we're giving every student the opportunity to succeed, and that requires us meeting them where they are. And that requires also us providing a very tailored, specific plan for each individual student, because not every student is the same. Once again, reflecting back to my time in the classroom, I served as a high school band and orchestra director. My principal chair clarinet player is going to have very different needs than my last chair clarinet player. I can either look at that as something that can be daunting, or I look at it as an opportunity to become the best version of themselves. And I think a lot of times when we're looking at education, we leave that part out of it. It's not as teachers. Now I'm putting on my teacher hat again. As a teacher, my goal isn't to get them to be a different version of me. Is to get them to be the best version of themselves. And so now looking at it from the position of being the executive director for our office, is how do we get those opportunities across the board and throughout the state, and have every student to have those opportunities to have a tailor-made educational process that will help them to be the best version of themselves. And a lot of times whenever people talk about the Choice Office, it's they only think about the scholarships and with charter, but really it extends so much further than that. It's the opportunity. You've got the home education, you've got Florida Virtual, you have magnet school programs and things like that. It's what I went to a public high school, but that high school was a program of choice, being an international baccalaureate program. So, I mean, we have to make sure that we're really understanding what is included in the term choice. And so my goal, having been both a teacher and a student in the public school in the traditional public sense, this is an opportunity for us to rewrite the narrative and understand that we are stronger together. If anybody's ever received an email from me, you'll see that hashtag at the right above my signature, hashtag stronger together. We have to work together to really navigate this educational landscape. If we spend so much time fighting each other and why are they getting this and why, well, you know, there are different needs for different areas. And really, ultimately, it's what's best for the students. And so when we join together and we make that our goal and our vision, then you can't fail. You can't fail. I feel like as a teacher, I had to understand that in order for my students really to succeed and to embrace becoming that better version of themselves, they had to lead. But also, I had to get out of the way. A lot of times, I was the reason they weren't being successful because I'm too busy trying to make it about me.
Right.
And that was one of the best things I could have ever learned early on in my educational career, is that it's about them and giving them what they need. And so I need to take myself out of the equation. And so I've got to make sure to give them that opportunity. And you mentioned, where do I see things going in the future? And like I said, I loved how you used the term opportunity, because what we've all heard, that necessity is the mother of invention. And right now we were thrown into really this opportunity to kind of start and develop some different skills. And I think too, just with everything that's going on, you look at how we've had to react to this and what education looks like right now during this time, and obviously very different. None of us anticipated this being the way that we would educate right now to get through this, but it's just another opportunity to see how impactful the educational community is and how resilient and how flexible we are. And I mean, you just look at these teachers who are championing this. I mean, they are rock stars. They are absolute rock stars for being the hands and feet to making sure that this is still moving forward. But if anything, this offers a potential look at how we're providing instruction coming forward. Now, I will, for me, being that public school teacher, the interaction, the personal interaction piece, I feel is very important. But once again, having an educational opportunity and experience that is tailored to your students and what they need. And we're living in a technological era, and technology is so important, and it changes the dynamics and the landscape of so much. But having now the opportunity to provide access to students, I think it's going to be something that's going to change the landscape. Whereas before, I mean, you look at different areas that didn't have the access to technology and different things that they needed. So if anything, this is an opportunity for those individuals and people in those places to now have a new resource that they maybe didn't have in the past. And so I think that's going to be a definite, like, we're going to look into how that shapes moving forward and how we take those advantages and take advantage of those opportunities that were provided during this time, whenever we all of a sudden have the necessity. And so now we're creating that invention and getting that access.
You know, we did a talk with Senator Manny Diaz the other day, and we published it on Redefined. And of course, Manny's an amazing visionary and has been one of the champions of education choice and equality of opportunity. I mean, that's really, he has the same passion. He talked a lot about, for example, the Florida Virtual School and what an amazing asset that is to the state of Florida. Obviously, it's the largest public school in the country. It's a statewide public school. It's serving multiple states. It also has helped kids in other countries. But they historically have had a competency-based system. And they've historically had to customize, you know, what stays common in Florida Virtual School is the standards, but they vary the time. What can we learn from the Florida Virtual School that can impact us across all of public education? I saw that they're ramping up to serve, 2.7 million kids by May 4th. Talk a little bit about how you see maybe using that kind of amazing asset that's somewhat unique to Florida to help all of us as parents and educators move forward and take advantage of the opportunities during this crisis.
Above everything else, is the fact that now people know more about it is so significant. You know, it does you no good to have a tool and people not know about the availability of the tool. So at the bare minimum, we now have exposure to this resource that we have again. And I think the big piece goes back to something I mentioned earlier about what's been so great about teachers, and that's the flexibility. In the county that I'm from, in Hillsborough, with the virtual school system that they have, students use that to tailor their day and their educational experience. And so I think it will continue to impact the same way that it has in the past, but now on a much broader scale.
I want to talk a little bit more about the equity issue as it relates to homeschooling.
Great.
Every parent always homeschools. That's not new. The question is whether it's full-time or whether it's part-time. You know,
right.
You got your kids over the weekends, you got them after school, you got them all summer. The reality is they're at home with you as a parent way more than they are in a classroom with somebody like yourself. But as we know, there's huge inequalities there. A lot of us are worried that, and you mentioned it too, that the current crisis might expand those inequalities because lack of access to technology, lack of support systems, et cetera. Talk a little bit about how you think we can begin to address those things. I mean, you're going to be in a critical leadership role. How can you use your bully pulpit, your influence? How can we all work together to really use this opportunity to create greater equity, particularly out of school learning, which we know is a huge part of every child's development?
Well, and it's I feel like you're throwing me a softball on this one, because you're talking to the guy who has taught for the last 11 years in a co-curricular class.
Yeah.
And so much of what happens in the music arena across the board doesn't just take place in the classroom.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because something that we talk about with my students so often was the fact that they're actually with me more often than they're with their parents because of the after-school activities the things that happen on the weekends. But it's that model is so significant when we start talking about impact and just the number of students who've been like, oh, you've been that father figure for me. You've been that mentor because of the time that we had together. And so being able to influence them and use the tools and the resources that I had to make those positive impacts, you take that and I'll translate it to the homeschooling situation, where when we say homeschool, home education, as you mentioned, parents, my daughter's here right now and she is having to go through her ringer, and she's doing all her online classwork and coursework and whatnot, but then we read to her at night. Well, that's a form of education.
Right.
When we're asking her to write something, hey, come write this letter with daddy, hey, come sign this card, like, also a form of education. So I think if anything, we're understanding the value of those elements a lot more now. But to speak to the question, how do we take this opportunity and leverage it so that it's something that is positive moving forward? I think it goes back to that access piece. Now we're providing access for those families that maybe didn't have access in the past. And it's my view on the role of education. We're not just educating students. We've got to educate families. And so as we're approaching this, we're not just providing computers to kids who didn't have computers. And if that's all we're doing, then we're missing the boat somewhere, because we've got to make sure that we're not only providing them with these technologies, but we're also showing them how to use them and how to leverage them to make themselves better. Something that the commissioner says all the time, and I mean this is at the forefront of his platform and when he's moving forward with education, is that education is freedom. It frees you, it provides an opportunity, it provides flexibility, it provides mobility. And so using this as an opportunity to get those resources and that education into the hands of those families is what's going to continue to elevate them. But we can't just look at it as a thing that we're just doing for now. This has to be something that it's a continued effort as we're moving forward. And then you also can't take away the fact that while we're providing these technologies to some of these families, it's not you're looking at some families that have multiple children in their household.
Yeah.
You're looking at the teachers who are teaching while having their own kids who also are being required to do things. And so that's something that we're not always looking at from the perspective of, like, for my household, we have, like, right now I'm talking to you on my work computer. I also have my personal laptop. My wife is on her desktop that she has, and my daughter is on my iPad. Well, we're blessed enough to be able to have those devices so that we're all able to manipulate things all at one time. But that's not the case everywhere. What about those teachers who have it's a two-teacher household. They both have to have devices. And if they've got two or three kids, not everybody's going to have five computers in their homes.
Right.
And so now take that out of it, and now let's just go to a household where there are no teachers, but you've got four kids.
Yeah.
Or no teachers and you've got three kids.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just, we've got to make sure that we're maintaining perspective and looking at things from the lens of how to be most effective, even including these situations like that.
Yeah. I want to end with one point you raised earlier, which is the challenge of bringing everybody together, convincing the adults to be a little less territorial and to focus more on the kids than their own little fiefdom. That's always a challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. Part of it is that resources are limited.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I remember we first started one of the first magnet schools in Pinellas County, which, by the way, was the first IB program in the state. The surrounding neighborhood high schools were furious. You know, you're going to start a magnet school. You're going to take all the very best kids. You're going to destroy.
Take my kids.
You're going to destroy all the neighborhood high schools. You know, so there's always this challenge of, you know, whenever there's choice and families have options, people feel like other people are losing. How do you create a culture of win-win? How do you convince people that whether a child is in a virtual school or dual enrollment or a magnet school or a neighborhood school or a charter school or a private school or a home school or some combination thereof, by the way, because oftentimes it's not just one, they're oftentimes doing multiple things at the same time. How do we convince all the adults to say, look, let's calm down, take a deep breath, let's work together, we're all on the same team. The enemy is not charter schools. The enemy is not private schools. The enemy is not neighborhood schools. The enemy is poverty. It's ignorance. It's hopelessness and despair. That's the real enemy. You have a bully pulpit. You have a role to help bring people together. I mean, what do you think? What's your thinking in that area?
What you'll find, Doug, is that I'm really big on relationship building, and it you've got to establish the relationship for people to even want to hear what you've got to say. Yeah. So first and foremost, you've got to be able to bring all the quote unquote players to the table, because nobody will listen to you if you just stand there and you're just constantly yelling and throwing that piece at them without having already established some type of relationship. From there, then you start talking about perspective, and you get everyone to understand that a lot of times, just because I'm looking at it with this lens doesn't mean that that's the only possible lens to look at it. But then you also have to understand that we're all products of our experiences. And so what my experience is going to differ from your experience. But now we've got to understand that we each have different experiences. So now let's look at it for what it is. And like you said, we've got to make sure we're targeting the correct enemy.
Right.
And if we're sitting here just fighting over who is the one making the decision and who's using these resources, then we're missing the boat on what the resources are used for. It's got to come back to the students.
Right.
It has to come back to, period. It's got to come back to the students. And so, and I think another way to do that, though, is to work to dispel the myths. You got to bust the myths.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, because going back to us being products of our experiences, we may have been in a situation where we dealt with something that was either not done in the right way or not done in the correct spirit, to where we were hurt by something, or we're just hearing what somebody else has talked about from their place of hurt. And if you're operating from something that happened 20 years ago, I mean, if you're talking about from whenever the whole choice movement started and we started charter school, I mean, if you're looking at it from that perspective, then it's 20 years ago is very different than it is today.
Right.
And so you've got to have a new perspective. But then you also have to bust the myths. And the only way to do that is you combat opinion with fact.
Yeah.
And then you work as best you can to eliminate those gray areas, and those areas where there might be things not happening the way they're supposed to do. You isolate, identify, execute. And so it's once you find those non-examples, which unfortunately are a lot of times the ones that are plastered at the forefront, and you figure out how to eliminate those, then that presents that opportunity for you to really understand that we're moving forward and to gain that perspective.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. I'm excited to work with you.
Absolutely.
And you're going to do great things, and congratulations.
Thanks so much, Doug.
All right. Take care.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.